have questions, they can come up to the mic and ask them, and the panelists can answer them here. You should say who you're directing your question to. If it's more than one person, say that. And please, no announcements now. Speak into it and let's see.
Remember COINTELPRO. I think in unity there is strength. Is this on?
Should be.
I think in unity there is strength. And to the extent that we don't have unity, we are divided against ourselves. And we really have to work to overcome those divisions.
What strategy?
Well, I think we have to be imaginative.
Coming out of mainstream feminism, there was a statement that said the liberal political arena, the choice is yours.
unleash the FBI and the CIA's Operation Chaos. It has not yet been made an executive order, but it exists. The Operation Chaos was suspended after the Rockefeller, were allegedly suspended. I mean, all these things, you know, are secret. So we don't know if they really suspended it. In addition, I want to point out one thing. The FBI shredded literally hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, which we then, in the case of the American Friends Service Committee versus Webster, got an injunction. Last year, we got an injunction to stop the FBI from shredding all of these records. So there's a lot we don't know, but allegedly it was suspended. Now, there is this executive order. There's a tremendous move afoot to, you know, unleash the CIA and the FBI again. When I said before, in answer to your first question, and I just had to recover, I'm sorry, I wasn't up for the question so quickly, remember COINTELPRO. I mean, I think it's very important to think in terms of what Zila just said, which is that we really need to think about the greatest united front kinds of organizing. Everything which divides us at this point, you know, serves them. And I was very distressed this week to see an article, for example, in Off Our Backs, which said, you know, that the right wing of the Mobilization for Survival refused to pass an abortion resolution. Well, that doesn't happen to be true. There was a tremendous amount of tension over it, but the Mobilization for Survival passed a very vigorous pro-choice resolution. And what that kind of thing does before we get the full story, well, already you see it creates, we can't support the Mobilization for Survival. My question at the time was, why on earth should the Mobilization for Survival deal with this? It's an anti-nukes problem. You know, this maybe doesn't even belong here. I think we need to think about strategies which preserve unity in places where we can work together. Of course, we have lots of problems. The left men are ridiculous in their sexism and absurd in their attitudes. Maybe we can never work with them. Maybe we can work with them on some things. But these are all questions of coalition building. The attack against us is coming from all sides. And we have, of course, made a tremendous gains. We can't lose them by battling each other. That's part of their program.
I'm very pessimistic. I'm much more pessimistic, actually, in spirit than my talk says. I'm hopeful, which is why I wasn't as pessimistic as I could be at times. I participated, and some of you here may have done so, in the New England Women's Studies Association meetings in Boston, and the topic of the conference was a working conference on racism. And one of the interesting things that happened was the Asian Women's Caucus ran a workshop to dispel a lot of the myths about Asian women. And the Caucasian women sitting in the back, one Caucasian woman turned to the other one and said, if that was a group of black women sitting up there, I'd be afraid. In other words, the stereotype of black women as dangerous, as deviant, is very present in the minds of even women who voluntarily come to a working conference on racism. Yes, very often the question has been raised by black women, are we going to be trading white male paternalism for white female maternalism? And their experience, unfortunately, has been precisely that. That what people have to understand about racism, and this, and it is very, very difficult for people to grasp this. When we're trying to decide which dimension of stratification has, you know, is the worst one, okay? We very often miss the historical realities that govern one particular one. From my analysis, racism is the controlling factor through which everything else must be seen when understanding the experience of black people in America, because racism has created two separate communities which have black and white women have not lived in the same social world, they have not seen the same troubles, and so how in the world are you going to have communication when you live in a segregated society? And you think of how often when black women must engage in struggle on behalf of their children, on behalf of their communities, when you start looking at the various agents of social control where black women live, and we're talking about where they live their everyday existence, the school teacher in the segregated schools that are engaged in psychological and cultural genocide against their children, who are these people, who are the policemen and now police women who patrol black communities in a colonial manner. And in Boston, we have a new thing called Proposition 2.5, which will effectively eliminate every single female police officer from the Boston police officer and all but, I think, 4 or 5 blacks, black males. Every woman, regardless of her color, will be gone from the police force next month, and nearly every black male.
This is passed?
Yeah. This has passed because they are using seniority. Last hired, first fired. This is the same for all school districts in Massachusetts. You know about the trouble we have with the racism in Boston and the problems with busing. The principal battle lines over the 12 years of struggle before that school desegregation decision were black women on one side leading the forces for desegregation and white women on the other, who were the leaders of the forces for segregation. It is important for white women to remember they are white and look at the history of white people in relationship to black people. I can't stress it enough. Students have asked me why in my race relations course I do not treat women as a minority group, and I do not treat women as a minority in my race relations course because I believe I can teach a race relations course using the same concepts and theories and never mention men. And it's very important that if the feminist movement is going to get rid of racism in the movement, they have to understand it thoroughly as an historical and structural phenomenon and what it means in terms of the exploitative social distance that exists between black and white people in a racist society.
I would like to know
11, 12 years later now, another conference, there are a lot of issues. I feel like about time spent marching in time in the same spot. In other words, there are a whole new lot of faces to me that I'm perhaps not a scholar. I don't know. I just don't have the same perception as I'm hearing. I am more concerned about, I don't feel the way that felt, let's say, the height of what I was involved. I don't feel the cohesiveness. I don't feel too much of the patriarchy in this class, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd just like to know.
You want to take it?
Yes, I did. No, it wasn't funny. It's a very important question, a very important statement. I think that it's politically incorrect to feel pessimistic. That's all. So I feel optimistic. Now, what I feel optimistic about in terms of the women's movement is that if you look at the history, our history as women, as politically active women, one of the things that you see over and over and over again is women saying, okay, the primary issue is the war. The primary issue is the Depression. What I think is different now is women are saying, we don't have to choose. It's not an either-or situation. We have for a very long time said later for us, and we're not saying later for us. We're saying we have to fight on every front, and we have to find our allies for each of those fronts wherever we can. So in terms of the women's movement, I don't feel it's a treadmill. Quite the contrary. I think that why the radical right is so hysterical about us is that we're not on a treadmill. And that all over America, in Topeka, Kansas, in Detroit, in Urbana, Illinois, in the small towns and villages of the Gulf states, women are organized for their own needs as never before. And in addition, we head up the great peace organizations. We head up the ECLC, the Emergency Civil Liberties Committee. And we head up rank-and-file organizations that take care of our children, our neighborhoods, our communities, and we're taking care of ourselves, and we're doing it all together. I feel very optimistic.
Anna, can I say something? Excuse me. I just wanted to say one thing very briefly, which is that earlier when I spoke and I mentioned the fact that it seemed to me that the major offensive against the feminist movement was because the feminist movement as a whole here, meaning here not your more radical factions of it, but the mainstream part of the women's movement has been radicalizing its demands, that I think it really matters to ask what part of the women's movement you're speaking of when you try to assess where we are in 1981 as opposed to 1969 or 1971. And the fact of the matter is clearly we've changed. I would hope that we have developed enormously, which I think we have. The fact of the matter is that some of the factions within the women's movement that were necessary for its development have redefined themselves in relationship to a strategy that has to become redefined if you really live in your political world. So that there is much discussion right now about, is the women's movement alive? Is it dead? Is it dying? The point here is that there are really multiple arguments about that issue. It seems to me that, going back to the question that Blanchard asked earlier, why is it that the anti-feminism is so central to the aspect of 1980 politics? I would argue that it is because feminism as a consciousness and as a politics is struggling to a new level of political clarity. And just very briefly, if you look at the arguments that were put forth in 1978 from the Houston meeting, funded by the government, it was your mainstream feminist movement, the demands that they listed, what it was that they wanted from the government, all right? Basically, they were absolutely revolutionary demands, an end to sexist education, an end to double discrimination against minority women, fair employment and open employment for anyone who wants it. The demands went 17 long, and basically there would be nothing in there that anyone could really disagree with if you were interested in women being able to live human lives. So the argument about where are we and what are our choices, I think our choices are limited to the extent that we don't have the option any longer not to deal with the reality of mainstream politics, because that's where the new right has moved, the politics. And so what we have to figure out is a way to be a feminist movement in relationship to that and to be able to move beyond it.
Yeah, I think I made a glancing reference to that in my statement, the fact that the issue of family life. Ivor Carruthers has a nice article called The War on African Familyhood, and where she essentially looks at the history of black people in America.
They can't hear you.
Ivor Carruthers has an interesting article called The War on African Familyhood, and her essential statement is that understanding black people's oppression in the United States or in the New World, but particularly in the United States because it took some funny twists and turns, is tantamount to understand. You can use the metaphor of a direct assault on traditional family structures and relationships between males and females historically for the entire, you know, 3.5 centuries, all the way through from when they first came until presently with the attack that was printed by Moynihan, and but what happened during slavery was essentially that to have a domestic unit was a problem, a critical political problem, because, and it was not until the 1970s, and this is a problem, it wasn't until the 1970s that you begin to get a revisionist history of slavery that uses the perspectives of the slaves in terms of their reality. In other words, what actually happened to them, how they perceived it, and what they did to organize against it. And the dimensions of slave resistance were varied. One of those was in the area of the family, the other one was in the area of slave religion, and you're just beginning to get a literature on that now. But in both cases, it was to maintain a community life separate from that of the master. And part of that was to maintain some sort of family life that involved, you know, mother, father, and children, or mother figure, father figure, not necessarily biological motherhood and fatherhood, but those relations in relationship to children in the quarters, because the slave master did not want it, and he did try to subvert it. I think part of the problem is that we do not, as feminists, have a preacher with a TV show that brings in $50 million in income. That I think that is a major component of it. One of the whole fundamental, this whole fundamental fundamentalist complex is a real problem. For instance, you can't hear me. For instance, I think, I forget which news magazine did a poll where they were trying to say that quote unquote religiosity does not coincide with these political attitudes that are attacking us now. But one of the problems with the classification that they use for fundamentalist, meaning Jerry Falwell and his ilk, is that all black folks are included in that category. Or if you know anything about the labels of black religion, yet Jerry Falwell would never last 2 seconds in most black pulpits. I mean, that is the kind, you know, the whole difference in attitude. And I think it was a way of trying to say, look, these folks really aren't so bad after all. And almost giving, you know, Falwell and his crew some credibility. But we literally do not have the same kind of media power that those folks do. And that is, has a big effect. There are some areas of the country where that's all people get on TV. And that's frightening.
Can we not reaffirm that we are also the same? I think that we are reaffirming that we are almost anti-family or anti-motherhood.
One more comment. I think it's important also to realize that there is a literature in the feminist movement that has done precisely that. I think Betty Friedan's article in the New York Times not too long ago, dealing precisely with this issue of the family and how do feminists make the statement surrounding family without trying to sound like, you know, we're just accommodating the opposition. But I think it's important to realize that people aren't, and in fact, most feminist issues are pro-family. I mean, that's the problem, and that's why they're attacking us so badly. I think.
When I argue that I think that mainstream feminism is becoming more radical, primarily I mean here that it is focusing on the patriarchal base of this society, which has really not been a recognized formation of the thought that really has been part of mainstream feminism. Now, let me just very quickly, I can argue that the identity of woman as a sexual class, all right, has really through 60s, 70s, now into the 80s, that there is much more of an identification of women as a sexual class. You needn't be theoretically a radical feminist to identify with that reality. And that has a lot to do with the changes in women's lives, black and white women's lives, but even more significantly white women's lives, because black women have been in the labor force, married women in the labor force longer than white married women have been in disproportionate numbers. My argument here is merely to say that the radicalizing faction of mainstream feminism is because a majority of married women do work in the labor force, are also mothers in this society, that the conflicts that are arising out of that reality, the reality they live in their daily lives, is coming into clearer and starker contradiction in terms of their understanding their definition first within patriarchal society as mothers, meaning here that they face what? The double day of work. So the point here is that although that there has been the possibility of understanding this historically. Never before has there been the real capacity in daily life activity for a majority of women to understand the patriarchal base of the organization of their lives. And that then can be seen pretty clearly in terms of the demands now that mainstream feminists are making.
Louder. I didn't get your question. If I understand your question, you're asking about how we structure in vis-a-vis conferences and so on, feminism, and does it preclude grassroots organizing? If that's your question, I just would like to say there is an incredible amount of grassroots organizing. And, you know, one of the things that I've been working on for a long time is political warfare. And that is the use and misuse of words and the use of our mass media to defraud us of the reality of the world that we live in. The mass media doesn't deal with us, and so we think we don't exist sometime, except when we come together like this. But in fact, all over the country, there is tremendous amounts of grassroots organizing, tremendous numbers of events for a variety of reasons, all of which have feminist and family and woman-loving parts to them, and they don't get into the media. But let me assure you, I just came back from Los Angeles and Detroit. The amount of public activity outside of New York, where we sometimes don't see it, which never gets into the media, Toledo, is incredible. Iowa, we think of Iowa as being nothing but a few pigs in a university. Well, it's not true. One of the most vigorous women's communities is in Iowa and Nebraska. There's a tremendous amount of grassroots organizing, and it's up to us to celebrate it because they white it out, like they white out everything else. You know, there's a mine strike going on. It's not on the front page of the Times. Only Poland is on the front page of the Times. Have you noticed that? It's called political warfare.
The Reagan campaign as far as women go.
a lot of the turnout stuff is still being compiled, particularly along sexual lines and racial lines. But it is now known that the number of women who voted they voted disproportionately in favor of Carter, and that the turnout of women in general was down greatly from earlier elections, more like about 23%. Normally, women are higher voter turnout than men. The other interesting piece of data about the election turnout was that men, of course, vote, I shouldn't say of course, but men did vote twice as often for Reagan as for Carter. Excuse
me?
Louder.
Speak a little louder or a little closer to the mic.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
Excuse me, before you begin, I wanted to say you and the woman after you were the last speakers. We cut out the discussion, We cut out the discussion between the panelists in favor of the questions, but if we let it go on, it could go on the last minute. So the woman behind you will be the last. I'm sorry.
I think that your statement does reflect a real problem. When I said that I think the problem isn't one of consciousness and more one of organizing, it wasn't to say that those are two totally separate things. And clearly, the way that one chooses to organize does also have effect on the way that people think about the problem. When I say that what we need to do is find a way to politically organize around these questions, part of that is being able to clarify what the real political issues are involved. And I think that there is, that it is true that many feminists have found it difficult to really get into the fray over the issues of the real conflicts that do occur in the process of abortion. I mean, it isn't an easy political or moral or individual question, you know, and I think most women know that. So that the point, though, of then how do you really work with that politically and really try to talk about what the true conflicts and problems are in the question of abortion rights, pro-choice, etc., that has something to do, though, with being able to lay an organizational base. I think that they are very much combined.
I think if you're saying we don't have to choose, I think the choices with the rise of racism will be made for us. That is precisely the problem with racism. One of the things that I did not say in my talk, but which comes through very clearly in the research that I did on women who are full-time activists, okay, is that there's a simple problem of time budgets, that most people get involved in struggle through very specific problems that they have. Looking at people who are involved in struggle over a long period of time, they become involved in other issues and other movements as they begin to discover the larger structures that are oppressing them. And the survival realities and the geographic realities will operate in such a way as to force most activist black women to focus on the racism struggles because of the everyday life implications. That, and a lot of the women that I talked to made this point because they were very upset. Okay, on the one hand, they recognized a lot of the issues of the women's movement. They had problems with some of the middle class aspects that dealt with fluff, what they called the fluff. But the basic issues are about around work, abortion, especially the use of abortion to discredit women from their struggles. The women that I talked to, and this, the data that I gathered was back about 5 years ago. So there was a high, very good, when you're measuring it against today's consciousness 5 years later, and then the consciousness was there. Their understanding of the women's issues was there. It was the additional time budget that was divisive, so that the retrenchment of racism and the rise of more and more acute survival problems in the black community is going to be the decisive factor, because they will most likely go to meetings that will deal with issues of, you know, literally blood issues of utter survival. And these are the activist women who felt that they should have a hand in setting the agenda of the women's movement, who felt they had something to teach other women because of their experience working full-time, plus being activists full-time, understanding a variety of political structures that they were fighting against. And I'm talking about the professional activists now, but that the choices very often were made for them in terms of who called them up and asked them for help, direct help. How do we deal with it? Organizing and struggle. Okay, a lot of the sexism, and I think this is the real damage that Moynihan did, was that the report, by discrediting black women the way it did and really blowing their images of strength into an image that said you're doing damage to the black community. Okay, on the one hand, those black ideologues who took on the issue, who turned around and said to black women, you're doing too much, get in the background, were the same folks. They had a real practical problem, because the reality was that they were dealing with competent women who were very much involved in every facet of black life, and they had to turn around and tell them somehow get back in the kitchen. And so your middle class mainstream journals, and Polly Murray writes about this, basically said black women should stay home and get out of the limelight because it looks bad for the race. rather than because of any kind of basic patriarchal ideology. And so it became a more vicious, a much more vicious, had a much more vicious impact. And as Angela Davis put it, it basically, the stereotype turned black men against black women in a way that they had not been before. And so that was further exacerbated. So it's a real problem.
I would like to add one thing. You know, one of the things that's very important is that we break the kind of ghettoization of our commitments. And there is right now a tremendously growing organization called the Anti-Klan Movement. And the Anti-Klan Movement is now operating in every single state in the Union. And there are Klan activities, as you all know, not only in Connecticut and New Jersey, but out on Long Island in Nassau County and Suffolk County. And one of the things feminists who want to really break this barrier should do, it seems to me, and I don't mean to be prescriptive, but it's really available for all of us to work on, is to participate in the growing effort to stop violence at its source. I can give you statistics on the incredible kinds of violence that have been going on all over the country, but it is the Anti-Klan Coalition that we could all participate in some way.
I think it's significant for feminists to recognize that there are some real parallels between the Moynihan Report of 65 and the Paul Laxalt Family Protection Act of today, and that basically, in many ways, black married women who were in the labor force doing what the white woman is supposedly doing to the family at the moment, that there are also ways that the structuring of the society has started also to change what the relationship is between black and white women. That's not to say that racism doesn't still function as an ideology, but it is to say that there are more common interests today between black and white women when one looks carefully at the changes that have been going on both in the black family and the white family. And that seems to me enormously significant for people who identify as feminists to really focus on in terms of trying to deal with the particular relationship of black and white women for the 1980s.
Thank you very much. I wouldn't have to cut the questions off, but I hope that people can speak to the panelists afterwards.
Lunch is being... Just
go ahead.
No, I meant to do it after already. I'm sorry. There is a whole afternoon program to be done through. I'm sorry. Lunch is in Macintosh, and to ease the congestion, there are tables on both levels, and doors on both levels are open.
Where is Macintosh?
Right over there. You follow the sign.
Follow everybody. Well, that was really stirring.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
I did.